Today on Family Talk.
Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with your host, psychologist, and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. Often we begin our programs by discussing the topic we're going to look at, but today I think we should jump in by introducing our guest, because he is truly a great man and a good friend of yours, Dad.
He is both of those things, Ryan. David Barton is our guest today. He's the founder and president of Wall Builders, a national pro-family organization that presents America's forgotten history and heroes with an emphasis on moral, religious, and constitutional heritage. David has been on our program before in the past, and he has been on national television, Glenn Beck's show, and many others on Fox and elsewhere. And I'm telling you, I love this man and his wife, Cheryl, who's sitting here on my right. We didn't give her a microphone today, but then she's shaking her head vigorously. But it is such a pleasure to have you here, David. I just appreciate what you're doing so much.
Thanks, Doc, and it's mutual, I assure you. We've used your materials for years, raising our own kids and now raising our grandkids, and so we appreciate all the influence you've had and all the lives you've changed in America.
You are all over the place, aren't you?
Yes, you guys
are on the road, I think you said about 90% of the time. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'll address usually about 600 groups a year. And so 9 out of 10 days we're on the road generally.
How do you do that?
That's the only thing I know to do. It's the only option we've had for 20 years. So I'm used to doing it, and it's just part of what we do.
Before we get into what we want to talk to you about today, and Ryan's right, we're going to zig and zag a little bit, but you just got back from Ukraine.
Yes, sir.
You and Cheryl together. Mm-hmm. And that came up at the last minute.
It did.
Tell us about that.
You know, they've gone through a lot of tumultuous occurrences, and strikingly, they were very interested because they're trying to create a new government. They've been 400 years without their own government, and now in 92, they came up with the Constitution, but they're still trying to figure out how to make things work. And so now with this latest turnover, they've chased the bad guy out of office. You had the interim president, now the new president elected. They said, look, we really like America stuff. We like your principles. Now, we don't like your administration, but we like America the way it's founded. Would you come show us how to build something like that over here? And so there were several of us that went over to Ukraine, met with for 2 days. We had a seminar with parliamentarians and key pastors from across the nation saying, here's how you build a good government. Here's how you build a good nation, a good culture. And it really was a remarkable time to see people so hungry to do the things that we seem to be running away from.
They really wanted to know the principles on which America was based.
They wanted to know those principles. And so I took with us a lot of we're very blessed. We have a library of 100,000 documents from before 1812. And a lot of those documents were documents and books that were used by the founding fathers when they created the American government. So they predate American government. So I was able to take a lot of those books of old lawgivers. You have the Justinians and you have the Beccarias and you have the Grotius and the Pufendorfs and all these others the founding fathers relied on, Locke and Blackstone and Montesquieu. And I took those books over and I said, guys, here are the books that gave us the principles. Now, actually, all these principles came out of the Bible. And so let's go to the Bible, because if you go into the U.S. Capitol and the U.S. House Chamber, we honor the 23 lawgivers, but Moses, the lawgiver of the Bible, is the only one that gets a full-face view, and he's looking right down in the speaker's rostrum.
Many of our listeners have not been to the House of Representatives. All these lawgivers through many cultures are listed around the room, and then at the back is Moses, and all of the others are looking to him.
That's right.
And he's looking down on the chamber.
Every other lawgiver has a side profile view except Moses, who's looking full face right down on the speaker's chair, and the lawgiver of the Bible. That's the one we honor. Everyone else looks to him, and he looks down on what's going on there. And so we said, well, let us show you what the Bible says. Here's the seven forms of government in the Bible, and here's the one that God prefers of the seven. This is one he tried to get his people to do. They left. Here's the four different types of law in the Bible, and this is the way it applies to your government. Here's the four different jurisdictions of government that God gives in the Bible. And so we just took them through the same things that were used to build our country. They were all out of the Bible. And interestingly enough, Ukraine is a very Christian nation, but they're not necessarily biblically literate. They know about Jesus, and there's so many of their leaders who have a relationship with Jesus, but they're really unfamiliar with the Bible and its teachings, especially on government.
Why did they invite you there? Because obviously everything you do is based on the Bible.
It is. And there is a missionary who's been working over there with their leaders saying, guys, there are solutions for your problems. America's been through some of these things, and we have some guys who know about this. And so when their leader said, well, we want some answers. We want some help. They went to Sam Rohr, who's head of Pennsylvania Pastors Network, and Sam's a good friend. And so with me and with Sam and some others, three of us went over there and shared for a two-day seminar with these parliamentarians and pastors about how to create a good government.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're in a kind of a Donnybrook with Russia now.
Yeah.
You told me something at lunch that I have never heard before, and that is with regard to Putin and his belief system.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because we in the Western world have a specific way of thinking and acting. And in the Eastern world, and Ukraine is part of the Eastern world, as is Russia, they're not used to Western culture and Western civilization, so they don't think and act like we do. And even with the church leaders over there, the group that they call the Baptists, it's really not Baptists. It's really they have two faith groups in Ukraine. They call them Pentecostals and Baptists. And Baptists are going to be the Baptists and the Methodists and Presbyterians, and the Pentecostals are going to be the Charismatics and non-denominational. And that's the only two groups they have. And each one kind of has his own pope. And we don't think a Baptist is having a pope, really. But over there, they're kind of totalitarian in the way they think. And so there's always somebody at the top of the structure as opposed to over here where things kind of bubble from the bottom up. So with Putin, it's hard for Westerners to understand, but Putin is he put the Bible in all the Russian schools because he said the only way we're going to stop crime and the mafia in Russia is the Bible. We got to be teaching the Bible to our kids. Then you look at the Easter proclamation he gave, and you would think that Billy Graham wrote that. And it is powerful, Jesus Christ-centered stuff. He's a very active member of the Orthodox Church in Russia, and he's very pro-life.
But he's a tyrant. He's a dictator.
And that's that tyrannical kind of thing, the if you will, the unilateral kind of thing that they have in the Eastern world. There's always a leader, and he runs everything.
So in a way, it's cultural.
It is.
I'm not excusing the behavior.
Exactly.
But it's a very cultural...
Exactly. And what happens is we in America see Putin on the cultural side, you know, and it's like, man, what a jerk, and probably is, you know.
Yeah.
But on the spiritual side, he's pushing Bible big time in Russia, and he's pushing biblical teachings, and he's pro-life and all that. And it's just that's the only thing our news is going to cover because they don't care about pro-life and marriage.
What is Christianity doing there? Is it thriving?
Christianity is thriving, but it's the same problem you've always had historically is when you have a state-established church, it always persecutes the other faiths. And so the Russian Orthodox Church has had some real difficulty giving up to more Protestant-leaning churches because now that the Soviet Union has fallen, they became the dominant church again. And it's the kind of way it was when the Lutherans dominated Germany, Methodists did not do well there. And when the Anglicans dominated England, Quakers didn't do well. And so you have some persecution of other denominations to a degree, but that is subsiding. It is doing better. Mm. The doors are becoming a little more open. The Russian Orthodox Church for a good while was not wanting any missionaries to come in, but that's now changed, and they're letting a lot of Bible schools come in. So they're pretty open.
What's the bottom line from your visit there? Did they accept it? Were they glad to get it? Were they interested?
The bottom line was they were absolutely shocked to find how practical the Bible was. They had no clue that all these things were in the Bible. I remember starting out, I asked the pastors particularly, I said, how many Bible verses can you guys name that deal with the government? And, you know, 7 or 8. And then I held up one book, and I said, this book by John Locke contains over 1,500 Bible verses on how government should operate. And they go, really? The Bible talks about government? Well, they'd never seen that. And so it was a very practical trip for them. We talked to them about all sorts of things, about education in the Bible, about all the things. And so they were alive and on fire. Since we left, we've gotten all sorts of letters from their court and their supremes and their councils and others saying, we got to have you do all of Parliament. And we've had other nations now say, we want you to come do that in our country. We want those principles. And so I'm thrilled that there are folks who want the right principles. And these are principles that have been used across the world. Whenever they're used, they work. Mm. And, you know, again, America tries to run from these things, but these other nations are wanting them.
David, is it we've gone so far? You know, I was talking to my wife about her time in Indonesia. I was reminiscing of seeing four people on a moped in Thailand. Yeah, and she said on her trip, they used to count. They found seven people on a moped one time, a whole family.
Oh, wow.
You know, kids in backpacks and front packs and in between parents and all that. No helmets, no seatbelt laws, all of that. And I was joking with her. I said, that's a rich person's law. You know, we are so well off here in our country that we make laws like that because we're not worried about survival. And so small business does better in those kind of countries. So are they looking for the best way to succeed? Have we gotten so successful that now we're full of ourselves, so we run from the principles that, that got us to where we are?
I think that's part of it. God warned his people in Deuteronomy when he's given the last sermon. He says, all right, you guys are about to go in the promised land. We were here 40 years ago. All of us have died off now except me, Moses, and I'm telling you young bucks what you need to do when you get there. He said, what's going to happen? You're going to get there, and you're going to have prosperity. It's a land of milk and honey, and you're going to start saying, look what we did for ourselves. And he said, your prosperity will become your curse because you'll forget God, and you'll think that you did all these things. And so we are so prosperous in America. Mm. What we did on the 4th of July, that is a world record. If you're 90 years old in Poland today, you have lived through seven revolutions, seven constitutions.
Oh my
goodness. Since
seven constitutions?
Yes. In South Korea, they've had six constitutions since 1948. Brazil's had 21 constitutions since 1821.
Oh my goodness.
I can take you through nearly every country in the world. Every generation, every 10, 12 years, you got a revolution. We don't have that. We don't have a revolution and a constitution every generation. We think that's normal to have stability. It is not normal.
Mm.
We're so prosperous that we're only 4% of the world's population. We produce 25% of the world's GDP. According to census numbers, if you live in poverty in America today, your lifestyle is higher than middle class in Europe. And that's poverty in America. So we don't understand what it is to not have.
Yet we're chasing after Europe and their political ideas.
It's crazy. Yeah, we say let's be like Europe. But, you know, one of the things I'm finding, and Ron, going back to your question, part of it is we've had so much prosperity we've forgotten who gave it to us. We think we did it ourselves.
Abraham Lincoln warned against
that. He warned against that. And that proclamation he did for a day of fasting was so pointed on that. The other thing I think that's happened is we no longer recognize the Bible as being practical. It's a spiritual book. We don't know that it's the book that built our economic system, five Bible verses that were used to build our economic. We don't know that it's what gave us our education system. We don't know that it's what gave us our medical system. Ben Franklin used Luke 10:35 in founding the first medical system. So we don't know it's practical. But one of the things, even talking about Europe, Norway is the most, well, it's considered one of the most secular countries in Europe. So Norway is secular. But the Norway Bible Society started doing something really interesting in Norway. Whatever was in the news, they would start printing Bible verses about, but they didn't tell you it was out of the Bible. They wouldn't give you a reference on it. So when something came up on military, they would print Bible verses on the military, but not tell you it was the Bible. If something came up on taxes, they'd do verses on taxes. If it came up on education or foreign affairs or whatever, and they spread this all over the country. And the people in Norway started saying, this is great advice. And they started clamoring, where'd this come from? And finally, the Norway Bible Society said, well, these are all Bible verses. And the people in Norway said, really?
You're now, kidding.
No kidding. The number one best-selling book, because they found it's a practical book. They had thought it was a spiritual book, you know, and they didn't realize how practical it was. Now, on contrast, the Bible didn't even make the top 100 best-selling books in America last year. So we got Norway that's found out it's practical, and we just think, oh, that's that church stuff. That doesn't have anything to do with what goes on with entertainment. That's got nothing to do with what goes. And so we have really relegated the Bible to a place of irrelevance in America. And in those other countries, they're finding the Bible really is practical. Like when we were in Ukraine, and you know, they saw it works for government. They didn't know that.
David, you have done more than anyone else, I think, to help people understand the founding fathers brought with them an understanding of Scripture and based the Constitution and the other foundational documents on what is written there.
Yeah.
And you have a passion to educate Americans about that heritage now, because it's not being taught in the schools, and it's almost completely forgotten.
Yeah, it is completely forgotten. It's not taught in the schools. As a matter of fact, we teach exactly the opposite in the schools. I've been appointed in a number of states officially by state boards of education to do the social studies standards, and that's 16 courses. So that's government, that's economics, it's world history, world geography.
Obviously not Common Core places.
Exactly. Well, I fight Common Core pretty hard. and one of the things that's been real interesting is I was recently in a conservative state, and I've been appointed from California to Texas, liberal conservative. And so in this conservative state, we were working on standards, and we were covering the civil rights era, we were looking at Dr. Martin Luther King, and I said, well, let's make sure in the textbooks and put in there that he's the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And they said, oh, no, we can't put a reverend in there. I said, wait, wasn't he a pastor? Yeah, he was a pastor of church. And you don't want to tell the kids? We can't put that in the textbooks. And I said, no, wait. Later in the textbook, you have all the kids reading his letter from Birmingham jail, right? Yeah. All kids need to read that. I said, well, that's a letter of a pastor to the other pastors, chewing out the other pastors on why aren't you out here with the rest of us? So as a pastor writing pastors, but you're not going to tell kids that? They said, no, we can't put that into. So, I mean, even today, we won't even call Dr. Martin Luther King a pastor.
Wow.
And so when you start looking at founding fathers and you say, oh, no, they're all atheist, agnostics, and deists. Why, look at Jefferson and Franklin. Okay, let's look at Jefferson and Franklin. By the way, there's 250 founding fathers. So let's look at Benjamin Rush and John Witherspoon and Francis Hopkins. And let's look at Stephen Hopkins and George Reed and Thomas McKean and all the ones they don't want to talk about. And that's what happens in school today is we'll get two non-religious guys. We won't get the rest of them. Or we get a religious guy like Martin Luther King and we won't talk about it.
Consider the contradiction we have here where churches are bragging about not being political and not being heard in the public square. And yet the speech that is most revered is the I Have a Dream speech by Dr. Martin Luther King, was a pastor.
Who was a pastor.
Now it's nuts. Liberals deal with contradiction better than anybody else. They live with it. They don't have trouble explaining
that's right.
It.
Yeah. And so they have an ability to compartmentalize their faith away from their life. And when you break your faith away from your life, it leads to bad results for the country and for you and for everyone else.
Where does your passion for what you're doing come from?
It really comes from the Bible, quite literally. I have found the Bible to be an exceptionally practical book. There's no question but what reading the writings of the Founding Fathers shaped my worldview, because I came through public education, I came through university, I came through being taught. I remember my sixth grade history teacher told me George Washington had 26 illegitimate children, giving new meaning to the phrase Washington slept here. So that's my exposure to the background of America. It's nothing I want.
Clarify that.
Does Washington, he have 26 illegitimate
he
children?
He had zero illegitimate children. Zero.
Because you hear that all the time.
And you hear that Washington died of syphilis. You hear that Washington died because university professors say he was having an affair with a woman. And when the husband came to the front door, he went out the back window and was in the snow and got pneumonia. And all of that is dead wrong. And those 100,000 documents from me on, I have the document from the doctors who treated him. I know exactly what happened. I've got his writings on what happened. None of that happened. Everyone around him said he's the most moral man they ever knew. Do you know George Washington issued an order every year to the military to prevent anyone from cussing in the military? If you cussed in the American military, he discharged you. There are 52 court-martials where somebody got court-martialed simply for cussing. He would not tolerate profanity. He told the soldiers, he said, we can't beat the British without God's help. We won't get God's help if we tick him off, and we'll tick him off if we cuss. No cussing in this camp. I mean, he would not tolerate. The first account of a homosexual being drummed out of the military was by George Washington, March of 1778. I mean, just take you through the morality of his life. I take you through his writings in life, and what we do today say exactly the opposite because we don't read his writings.
So when people make that claim he had a bunch of illegitimate children.
Dead wrong.
Dead wrong, obviously. Where are they pulling that from, and what do they use as their, you know, if you're going to debate somebody and they say, well, this is the evidence we have to prove this.
Here's the way it works. Very intriguing, and it's a very smart way to do it if you're on the other side and want to tear down something. In 1926, W.E. Woodward came out with a book called George Washington, The Image and the Man. He's progressive. They became very active in education in the 1890s, 1900s. And he says, you know, we all thought we knew George Washington, but that's just the image. What if he really wasn't as moral as we've been told? What if he really wasn't as religious? What if he refused to take communion? What if he had affairs? And it's what if? Well, the next year in 1927, and I've got Woodward's original book, not a footnote in it, and he makes all these insinuations. And the next year in 27, a book came out, and it's stamped on the inside, the Naval Academy, and they just tore him up. They said, wait a minute, you said Washington's doing this. Here's where he was on that day. Here's everybody who testified to it. Here's the meeting he was at. He wasn't doing what you said. And so they tore it up. But what happened was in 1930, a bunch of books came out on George Washington saying, you know, Washington isn't what we thought he was, and they quoted the 1926 book.
Wow.
And the 35 books quoted the 30 books quoting the 26 book. The 40 books quoted the 1940 books quoted the 1935 books quoting the 1930. So today I can show you 100 books that say that George Washington had illegitimate children, but none of them predate 1926.
That's right.
So what we do is circular logic. We quote each other. It's that incestuous thing that academics do. When you go back to all the eyewitnesses, you go back to the testimony, you go back to those who served with him.
Shirley and I were in Washington, D.C. in 1969. I think it was my first trip there on a professional basis. And we rode in a cab, and the cab driver talked to us about Washington's affair with Lady Fairfax.
Yeah.
He even named her the person he'd had an affair with. And that was baloney too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It's interesting. I have the letters of Washington between Washington and Sally Fairfax, and Fairfax was the nearest neighbor. And we actually address this in the book called Original Intent, because Washington, if you take one line out of the letter, it could sound like he had an affair. But if you read the whole letter, it's really clear he didn't. And by the way, that's exactly what they did with the Thomas Jefferson Separation Church and State letter. When you read the whole letter, Jefferson makes really clear the separation church and state prevents the government from stopping a religious activity. But if you just take eight words out of it, a wall of separation between church and state, then the Supreme Court says, oh, there's supposed to be a wall of separation between church and state. We can't let somebody say God at graduation. Well, that's not what Jefferson said. The wall of separation prevented the government from stopping that. And that's exactly what they've done with Sally Fairfax.
David, they couldn't. You can't really tell us that we have a Supreme Court decision based on eight words taken out of context.
Absolutely.
They really didn't study this, look into it any deeper than that?
No.
That's terrifying. This is the Supreme Court of the United States.
When you have an agenda, you don't let facts get in your way. And I will tell you that in previous Supreme Court cases, when they used that Jefferson letter, like in 1878, Reynolds versus U.S., they quoted the letter. And you read the letter, and it's really clear. And therefore, the Supreme Court used Jefferson's separation church and state letter to keep religious activities in public. Then, in 1947, they just use eight words from the phrase. And since 1947, they've not quoted his entire letter. They only use that eight-word phrase.
To give you a personal example of this again, I was on Larry King Live show many times, both radio and television. And it started in 1983, and I was probably on 20 times or more. And he used to really try to undermine what I believe. He was, you know, I had a friendship with him, but he really needed to show the weaknesses in it. And he once said to me, well, after all, you know, the separation of church and state's in the Constitution.
Yeah,
and I said, I'm sorry, Larry, but it's not. Oh, yes, it is. I said, go look it up. And he never got back to me.
That's right. I have a friend in Congress who carries the Constitution with him. And when somebody says that, he says, here's the Constitution. I'll give you $1,000 right now if you can find that clause in the Constitution.
Yeah.
I did that to a congressman one time. He said, well, you know, we really would like to do some things to strengthen the family here in Washington, but we really can't. I said, why? He said, well, because of separation of church and state. I said, well, what about it? He said, well, it won't let us. I said, what are you talking about? He said, the Constitution, separation of church. I said, that's not in the Constitution. He said, yes, it is. And he's an attorney. I said, no, it's not. Yes, it is. No. And he says, and so I pulled out a Constitution and said, find it for me. He said, it's right here in the First Amendment. And he went to the First Amendment and he read it. He says, I can't believe this. He said, in law school, they always told me the First Amendment said separation of church and state. And it wasn't there, you know, obviously. But that was what he's taught in law school. And that's what Larry King was taught, and so many Americans are taught.
I just can't believe that. You know, there's a problem when a congressman doesn't know the very Constitution that they swear to serve and protect. I mean, it's just amazing. Well, we are out of time for today here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, but you are not going to want to miss parts 2 and 3 of this conversation. And if you'd like to find out more about David Barton and his book, The Founder's Bible, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or give us a call at 877-732-6825. This is Ryan Dobson saying thanks for joining us. God bless, and we'll see you again tomorrow for part 2 of the program with David Barton on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Meg Meeker for Family Talk, and I want to let you know about a very special offer that we have handpicked for you for the month of July. Raising a strong-willed child is difficult, but it's not impossible. But I'm here to tell you that you can be a successful mom or dad and raise your strong-willed child into a successful adult. And to show you how serious we are at Family Talk, that you can do this, for every donation we receive this month, we will send you not only Dr. James Dobson's book, The New Strong-Willed Child, but also the corresponding DVD from the brand new Building a Family Legacy series. Both are yours when you give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by visiting our website, drjamesdobson.org. Thank you for supporting us and for standing on behalf of families. And as always, thank you for listening to Family Talk. Who doesn't want to be encouraged to make their marriage stronger? Our new Family Talk iPhone app is designed especially to uplift your marriage in a way that makes it easy for both husbands and wives to find great resources. The customized Family Talk app tailors content around where you are in life. Whether you're a husband, wife, dad, or mom, the Family Talk app will provide you with daily inspiration to strengthen your marriage and invest into the lives of your children. Go to drjamesdobson.org/app to download your free customized Family Talk app today.